We're going to pretend for our listeners like we're just starting. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Perfect. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity to help folks around the community and understand what OSC does and get to work assisting our endangered species as well as maintaining a viable economy for the area.
That's wonderful. Now, tell us a little bit why you're here. What's your story? How did you come to Sandpoint?
So I was born and raised in Boise. After high school, I went to college at the University of Idaho and got a degree in rangeland ecology and management. Originally thought I wanted to get into wildlife resources, went to school with the full intent to become a conservation officer with the Department of Fish and Game, took a law enforcement class and realized that I was not cut out for law enforcement. And so 2 years into college, I started looking around and found a degree in rangeland management. And I really enjoyed livestock, kind of grew up around livestock. But I also had a passion for the outdoors, and the range seemed like the perfect fit for me. Not knowing that in college I would meet my wife, who is a Sandpoint native, and there's not a lot of rangeland in this area. So after college, we moved to Boise for 3 years, and I worked for the Idaho State Department of Agriculture as a range management specialist down there, working with ranchers in the area in southern Idaho. And then COVID kind of hit, and we were working from home and just didn't love Boise as much as I did growing up. And so my wife and I decided we wanted to move to Sandpoint. And not having the range opportunity here, we didn't really know how to make that happen. And one day her parents called, who owned Dubs Drive-In at the time, and asked if we'd be interested in taking over the restaurant. And so we thought, well, it'd be a great opportunity to get us up to Sandpoint and start making relationships in the community. So we made the jump mid-COVID and decided to take over a restaurant, which was not easy. But I ran Dubs for 2.5 years. And then through that time, I was really missing natural resources and working with natural resource professionals and going to those meetings. And so I started looking around and stumbled across this job with OSC. And I'd worked with my current boss in my previous position in Boise, and I gave him a call and just said, hey, looks like an awesome job. The only caveat is it looks like it's located in Moscow. I'm in Sandpoint and don't want to move. Is there any way that you guys would be willing to move the job to Sandpoint? And it all kind of worked out and got me to where I am today.
Yeah, it seems like I've worked with my other hat on. I work with the Friends of Scotchman Peaks and do a lot of conservation work, and have had many conversations with folks who have populated the Governor's Office of Species Conservation. They've always been in Boise.
Yes. Yeah, it's not a big organization. We've only got about 15 folks statewide, and so a lot of our work is policy-centric, and Boise is obviously the place for policy work. So, it's been tough trying to get people to come up from Boise to get involved in the community and travel up to Sandpoint and Bonners Ferry and Coeur d'Alene for meetings when it takes a full day or two to do that. And so it really worked out well to move the position to Sandpoint and have somebody able to integrate in the community and run into it at the grocery store and learn about endangered species. So I think the folks in Boise are really excited to have the position here.
It seems like a natural fit to have someone in North Idaho where we do have so many of the threatened and endangered species.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the bulk of the species that I work with have habitat north of Coeur d'Alene. And so being located in Moscow makes it really hard to travel up to Coeur d'Alene or Sandpoint or Bonners Ferry 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, I spend 2 days a week in Bonners Ferry alone, and so it's a lot of travel, and so it helps out a lot being here.
So give us a sense of what your job entails. What does a day or a week look like?
So the bulk of my work is tied to a lot of right now is policy work for endangered species. So some of the species that I work with are grizzly bear, lynx, wolverine, caribou, white bark pine, and a few others. Being the terrestrial species project manager, I don't work with any of the species that live in the water. We have some aquatic folks down in Boise that deal with the fish side of things, and so I'm strictly terrestrial land-dwelling species. So right now we're kind of figuring out how to integrate this position into Sandpoint. It was a position in the past, but it's completely different based on the location now. So we're really working hard to work with Idaho Department of Fish and Game and figure out how we can work cooperatively with them and almost kind of integrate into our goal is to integrate into their grizzly bear conflict education outreach program and assist with those conflicts. We had a huge increase in conflicts last year in the area. And so there's certainly a need to get some more boots on the ground and helping the community prepare for grizzly bears and living with bears and being bear aware. So my goal and my administration's goal is to kind of work into their program and assist Fish and Game as much as we can with the grizzly bear side of things. I think that's the number one priority in the area. But I'm also working with our wolf livestock depredation prevention program, where we assist livestock producers across the state to limit depredations caused by wolves. And then we also help reimburse them if they do have a loss that's confirmed due to wolves. So we get federal funding for that, and I assist in administering that program. and also doing some really neat work with the Idaho Transportation Department on monarch butterfly conservation and implementing conservation strategies on the right-of-ways across the state of Idaho. We're currently drafting a candidate conservation agreement with assurances that'll help us if the monarch butterfly is ever listed to not need any extra measures put in place. We're trying to do everything we can now before the butterfly gets listed. So there's some really neat work going on and really starting to dabble into the ESA species of not only North Idaho, but statewide.
So that's a pretty big range right there, from bears to butterflies and a whole lot of things in between.
Yeah.
What are the things that tie it together? What's the big picture in terms of the work you do with species conservation?
Our mission is to recover endangered species and preclude the listing of candidate or threatened species. But also a big part of that is maintaining a viable economy in the state of Idaho. Being under the governor's office, it's certainly a mission of the governor to maintain that viable economy. And in the state, we rely so heavily on our natural resources, which includes our wildlife, to maintain that economy, whether it's through hunting, fishing, recreation, or timber, public lands grazing, all sorts of things. So we try and maintain that balance of recovering those species and helping our sister agencies with managing those species and the natural resources, but also keeping in mind that economy factor of it. We don't just focus on one species or how to manage a species. It's a double-edged sword trying to balance those two things. So that's kind of where we fit in. We're not management or regulatory by any means, but we try and help the different agencies balance those two aspects of natural resources and the economy is our goal.
I'm sure listeners are thinking mostly of the fauna, the wild animals, grizzly bears, butterflies, lynx, as you put them, wolverine. But they also depend on the landscape, on the flora. And there are a few, not many, but there are a few protected species of native plants. Tell us about that interplay.
Yeah, so the big one for me up here is whitebark pine. As some of you may know, it was recently listed as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act about a month ago. So we're currently working with our federal partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service to determine what actions need to go into place or how we need to change our management of our forests to deal with that listing of the whitebark pine. And so it's certainly a goal of the state of Idaho and the governor's office to recover that species and work with our partners to figure out how to do that in the most effective way possible. So that's the big plant that I work with in North Idaho. But we also have Spalding's catchfly in the Moscow Palouse area that we work with, and then slick spot peppergrass down in southern Idaho we do quite a bit of work with as well, in that desert country down there. There's a few others, but those are kind of our big three that we work with right now that we have a little bit of funding and prioritize our work on. Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned the Idaho Department of Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Those have to be primary agencies you consult with, partners, if you will. Are there others?
Yeah. I mean, we try and work as closely as we can with all of our partners, whether it's state, federal, tribal, or private partners. As far as the state agencies go, we work really closely with all of our state agencies, Fish and Game obviously being one of our biggest ones since we both have a wildlife mission. But as far as commenting on the NEPA process or working on projects on federal lands, we work really closely with the Office of Energy and Mineral Resources, Department of Parks and Rec, Idaho Department of Lands, State Department of Agriculture, all of those to try and consolidate and have concise comments for the federal agencies. So a lot of times we'll submit comments under one letterhead being the state of Idaho, and the governor or our office will sign off on it. Or if it's a fish and game heavy project, their director will sign off on that. But our goal is to have one voice as a state going forward. So we work really hard to work with our sister agencies and maintain that one voice and make sure we're all collaborating and understand each other and where we all come from. But it's not possible without the federal partners either. The Fish and Wildlife Service, especially being endangered species focused like my position is, we have to work with our partners at the Fish and Wildlife Service. They're the ones that set the rules and do the listing and the monitoring to determine delisting. And so we try and work really close with them. And they have some really great folks in the office here in Coeur d'Alene that I've worked with through their partners program and some of their grizzly bear folks. They really make it easy to work with them. So it's been really good so far. And the tribes are awesome too. We have some really great active tribes in the area that help manage the wildlife. And so I've had the opportunity to work with both the Kalispell and Kootenai tribes while I've been here, and I've really enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, we've had both tribes on the show before, and they have certain areas of interest in regards to species conservation and have very active programs. So that would make a lot of sense. And the Forest Service is a land manager for a large swath of area up here, Bureau of Land Management around the state, but also has a significant amount of smaller holdings in our area. And you must work with both of those agencies one-on-one sometimes, or only through the collaboration work of the state agencies?
Absolutely. A lot of our work, I attend as many of the forest collaboratives in the area as I can. And so we work with the Forest Service a lot through the forest collaboratives. But there's a lot of one-on-one work too, whenever it comes to specific projects, how those projects are going to affect the endangered species of Idaho, and also how they're going to affect the economy and what the timber sale may look like in the area. And the BLM as well. I haven't had the opportunity to work with them as much here, not being the large landholder like the Forest Service is. But in my past life with the State Department of Agriculture, I was able to work with the BLM quite a bit in southern Idaho. And it, same concept, just different landscape, really. They're bound by a lot of the same regulations in the NEPA process. And so it helps us a ton to have that understanding of the NEPA process and what they have to go through. And that gives us the ability to work hand in hand and together with them versus fighting. I think having that understanding makes it a lot easier to work together on projects.
So it must be a boots on the ground job as much as an office job. Walk us through that split of work.
That's the ultimate goal. You know, I started in October, which is a really tough time for a natural resource, outdoor loving person to start a job, because that's the office and meeting season. And so I'm definitely getting cabin fever a bit, ready to get out on the ground. Been tied to the office a little bit, working on the policy work, a lot of meetings. My goal has been over the winter to meet as many people in the natural resource community and the community as a whole in North Idaho as I can before that field season starts, because once field season starts, the time gets away from people pretty quick. And so we're trying to build what my field season is going to look like still. Again, our hope is to kind of integrate into Fish and Game's conflict management program. So that's going to be out at the fairs and the farmers markets and informing people how to be bear aware and protect your livestock and your property from grizzly bears, and recreationalists how to hike and use your bear spray and be aware that bears are in the area. But it's also going to be assisting landowners when they have conflicts with grizzly bears and helping them maybe put out some electric fence to protect their livestock. And then if a grizzly bear needs removed or relocated, assisting in that process as well and working with the landowner to assist them. But it's been really great having this winter to build those relationships and meet people. I'm glad I had the opportunity. As much as I'm ready to get out in the field, it's been a really good opportunity to meet as many people as I can from Coeur d'Alene to Barners Ferry and start working into those communities and building those relationships.
Well, you got to strap on some snowshoes and go looking for moose antler sheds now.
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah. The Idaho Department of Lands has been great, and they got me out in there side-by-side with Tracks a month or so ago and looked at a timber sale at Dodge Creek, and so it was really good to get out of the office a little bit. But yeah, it's time to get out on the ground and see the area a little bit more.
So here in the Panhandle, we're so close to neighboring states, Montana, Washington, and of course Canada just to the north of us. How much cross-jurisdictional work do you do with other states or with our neighbors to the north?
In my short time in the position, it's tough to say how much work I will do across boundaries. But in the time here, I've gotten to work with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the Fish and Wildlife Service over out of Libby, Montana, a little bit on some grizzly bear stuff. But a lot of that interagency and cross-boundary work happens in more, I guess, higher level forums, whether it's the Western Governors Association, the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee, some of those groups. That's where a lot of that cross-boundary work happens. And I'm slowly trying to integrate into those and getting involved with the Selk Creek Cabinet Yak subcommittee of the Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee has helped a ton getting to know those folks on both sides of us. And I know that group consists of people in Canada and Washington, Montana. The Interagency Grizzly Bear Committee group as a whole has folks from, I think, four or five different states, as well as both countries. So there's a lot of cross-boundary work when it comes to endangered species that needs to be done. These species don't stop at state lines or country borders, and so trying to manage it by ourselves would not be possible. There's some really great stuff going on in other states that is super awesome to tap into, as well as I think we got a lot of great stuff going here that I think the other states can benefit from. So as much as we can work together, I think it'll help us in our ultimate goal of recovering these species and living with them and preventing conflicts. Balancing things off each other is definitely a key. So I hope to work with those partners a lot more as I go forward.
So draw us a map of the area, the bucket you work in, are there other managers working with other parts of the state? And so how far south do your responsibilities go?
We're spread out pretty big. So when I interviewed for the job, I asked that question, and the answer was that I will cover from the Salmon River in the Riggins area north. So I'll go all the way down there. Haven't really spent a lot of time down there yet, being the fact that the endangered species that I focus on are more heavy in the northern Idaho panhandle. Mm-hmm. But if the need arises, there is a recovery area for grizzly bears down around the Lewiston area. And so if the bears start to show up over there, I'll definitely get down there and do some work. But I am the only terrestrial species position north of Boise. We got a federal lands coordinator in Boise as well that certainly helps me out a lot. He helps with some of the forest collaboratives in the Lewiston area. We'll meet halfway if we need to, and he covers the McCall area. But as the need arises, I'll definitely travel down to Riggins, Lewiston, Moscow if I have to. And it definitely, our wolf prevention program will require a lot more travel as well. A lot of our applicants for the prevention program are in the Salmon, Chalice, Riggins area. And so my goal this spring is to go around and meet with those various ranchers and figure out how we can help them out with their prevention activities. And so I'll have quite a bit more travel come this spring down to that country. But my main focus is definitely North Idaho. So we've got the grizzly bears and lynx and wolverines up in this area. It'll keep me plenty busy up here.
Tell us a little bit about the work you do on species that are maybe sensitive but not listed as threatened and endangered. I'm thinking iconically around here we have the mountain goat that falls into that category, for example, but there are probably others as well that you have your eye on.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly keep an eye on it. It's not necessarily under our purview. Fish and Game definitely handles it a lot more, but if there are certain questions, I know in the past our office has worked with some of those sensitive species that may have recovered to a point where Fish and Game's handled the bulk of it now, but it's something we certainly keep an eye on. As you see with the wolf situation, they're recovered, they're not listed anymore, but our office definitely still keeps an eye on and helps out with the wolf situation. So the rare and declining species we definitely help out with as needed, but our main focus is recovering those endangered species and those candidate and threatened species so that we don't have another listing, or we can do as much as we can to preclude that listing is our goal.
Great. Well, if you've just been joining us this morning, we're talking with Austin Terrell, Office of Species Conservation for the state of Idaho. And we're going to take a short music break, come back and talk a little bit more with Austin. This is Mary Black, Mountains to the Sea. And we're back with Terrell Austin from the Office of Species Conservation, talking about his work with threatened and endangered and other species here in North Idaho. Welcome back to the show, Austin.
Thank you.
Terrell. Sorry. So we were just talking a little bit about the range of your work. What are some of the priorities you have for the coming spring and summer as things do open up and you want to get out on the landscape? What are some of the things you're going to focus in on?
Yeah, one of the biggest priorities I have is kind of integrating into the communities and working with those folks. I think primarily it's going to be the private landowners, livestock producers, some of those guys who had some problems last year with grizzly bear conflicts. I know we had about 22 conflicts, I believe, last year, where a normal year is 2 to 3 conflicts. So really trying to get ahead of the curve on that and working with those guys to start preparing their properties to reduce those conflicts. We definitely don't want to see a year like we had last year. And so spreading the word about Fish and Game has a great program where they have temporary electric fence that folks can loan out, as well as a potential cost share for permanent electric fence. So spreading the word on that, that there's an opportunity there, and trying to be a little more proactive, I think, is my goal. It's definitely harder to be reactive and manage the bears when you're behind the pace of things. Another priority that I have is kind of working in the Priest Lake area as well. There's certainly grizzly bears on that side too. They didn't have the conflicts like Boundary County had this year, but there's bears over there, and it's a highly populated area in the summer. So getting to spread the word to the recreationalists, the folks at the resorts, the people out hiking, just letting them know that there are bears in the area and to be prepared if you were to encounter one. And so I'd like to attend some of the events such as the Huckleberry Festival over there, and also get into the farmer's market here in Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry. It'd be fun to get into some of the schools, maybe at the forestry contest, get a booth set up and work with Fish and Game to maybe take turns at some of those booths and work together to just get some material out to folks and letting them know about grizzly bears and even black bears as a whole. I mean, just working to be bear aware and increase the knowledge of the community. And I think the ultimate goal is to have a viable population of grizzly bears in North Idaho to the point where we can potentially delist, but also at the same point, having a knowledgeable and a community that's ready to deal with that increased population of grizzly bears. And so we don't have that conflict going forward, and we can hopefully live peacefully on the landscape with one another. So that's my ultimate goal going forward, is kind of hit that education and outreach side of things and letting folks know about what's going on and how we can prepare for it.
Yeah, education's so important. And of course, no news here. We've got a lot of people new to the area moving in the last couple of years who may or may not be aware that they're moving into grizzly bear country. Any specific strategies to get the word out to folks who are new?
Yeah, definitely working on that. I worked with the Kootenai Tribe and Department of Fish and Game. We're currently putting together a brochure, a bear aware brochure, to kind of cover all aspects of recreationalists and private landowners and how you can kind of prepare yourself for conflicts with grizzly bears. And that pamphlet should be done hopefully soon. Working with the Kootenai Valley Resource Initiative to kind of finalize that and make sure it looks good to all the folks up there. And then my goal, in a partnership with the tribe, they're going to help me with printing as long as I am able to distribute them. And my goal is to go to the real estate offices, the VRBO folks, the HOAs in the resort areas like Priest Lake, and distribute that material so that they can have that on the fridge in their rentals, or whenever they got a person moving in from out of state, that realtor can provide them with that information so they know that there's the possibility of running into a grizzly bear when they come to North Idaho. So having that material for them and for our tourists, I think, is going to be huge. And just letting folks be educated right off the bat, I think, is going to be the key. So I'm hoping we can work with some of those real estate agents or the folks who are dealing with the newcomers and kind of train them as well so they can educate the new folks coming in. I think is going to be huge because they're that first step to getting folks to North Idaho.
Yeah, certainly the bear awareness has to be one of the primary focuses. Are there any real other hot topics that you have coming up that are on your plate to deal with?
Grizzly bears are definitely the hottest topic right now. Anytime you have an apex predator and humans on the landscape, there's going to be some conflicts and issues. They made the news a lot in the past and have again recently. And so that's definitely a hot topic going forward and discussing the potential delisting. A lot of that happens at our Boise office and with the governor down there. So I get to do more of the on the ground work. So I don't have a lot of information as far as that goes, but I think it's going to continue to be on the radar of folks going forward. So I don't see grizzly bears going away anytime soon. Another hot topic that we deal with is going back to the wolf situation. I mean, for a long time in Idaho, wolves have been a hot topic and kind of a big deal with sportsmen and landowners and livestock producers, as well as recreationalists and wildlife enthusiasts. And so I don't see that one going away, but fortunately my work is not so much in the community conflict side of things, but more of the livestock prevention conflict side of things. And I really enjoy that work, coming from an agriculture background, being able to work with the ranchers of the state of Idaho and try and prevent those losses to wolves and helping those producers live cohesively with wolves on the landscape. I know there's a lot of sheep producers down in southern Idaho that really have a tough time with wolves. And so working with some of our NGOs, as well as those producers directly, to implement some prevention non-lethal strategies to help with those conflicts, I think is huge. But it's definitely a controversial thing as we go forward. I mean, it was in the news this summer that a sheep producer down there lost, I think it was roughly 150 sheep to wolves in a pileup. And so it's a big deal, and they'll definitely stay in the news, and our office will stay apprised of the issues for sure.
Wonderful. Anything else you'd like to talk about? We'll shift over to a non-Office of Species conservation topic in a moment. But before we wrap up this portion of the interview...
Yeah, as people are interested, I'd love to have the opportunity to talk to folks. I'm located in the NRCS office here in Sandpoint through a cooperative agreement with the USDA. So it's over by Lighthouse off Washington Avenue. And if you guys have any questions or are interested in OSC, definitely stop by. My door is always open, and I'm happy to talk with folks about endangered species and what our office does. In the few months I've been there's not a lot of people in the area that know what OSC is, what we do, and how we can assist the community. So if there's any listeners out there that are interested in more, reach out to me, stop at the office. You can touch base with Phil, and he can definitely get you my contact information. But I'm happy to talk. And like I said, my ultimate goal is to meet as many people in the area as I can. So I'd love to sit down and chat with folks as the opportunity arises. So.
Yeah, it's a wonderful resource to have here in Sandpoint. I think a lot of people are just largely unaware that the office exists, and probably would have no idea that there's a representative right here in town.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And I think it gives people a tie to the folks in Boise and the governor's office. So my ear's always open, and I can definitely relay information down south as it's necessary.
Okay. So So the Office of Species Conservation in the NCRS building here in Sandpoint, contact Austin. Now, I'd be remiss because I know a certain number of listeners and I know who they are. I've just been drooling since you mentioned Dubs. So let's shift and talk about that. Tell us what's happening with Dubs and what you and your wife's role is in all of that.
Yeah, so I guess it was August when I was offered this job and we had a tough decision to make because I truly wanted to get into the natural resource field again. So we made the decision in August that we were going to close down Dubs for the slow season, for the winter, being that there's just a lot of people don't come off the mountain and the restaurants aren't as busy in the wintertime. And so we figured it was a natural thing to do. My father-in-law, Marty, wasn't interested in coming back. He had a lot of travel planned, and so he didn't really want to take it over and put his travel on hold. He's certainly enjoying the retired life. And so we kind of put Dubs on hold for a bit, and I started this job, and it kind of came up that my wife's cousin and her husband, Beth and Ryan Walsh, approached us after we made the decision and said, hey, we'd definitely be interested in taking Dubs over if you guys were interested in it. And so we expanded the discussions, and there was definitely the thought, too, of how do you sell Dubs whenever you know in the future there's a potential for the state to come and expand the highway. I mean, we've already gone through it in the past with the Curve project, and so my in-laws morally couldn't sell Dubs to somebody knowing that will be coming in the future. And so they approached the city of Sandpoint and asked them if they had any interest in buying the property potentially. And the city showed a lot of interest in it, being that that would give them some leverage for whenever the time came for the expansion of the highway, they could have that property and kind of have a say in what's going on the state highway. And so there was a lot of interest there. And actually, 2 weeks ago at the city council meeting, council voted to purchase the Dubs property with the caveat of a lease back to Geraldine and Marty, my in-laws, and then they will in turn sublease to Ryan and Bethany Welsh. So the goal is to continue Dubs for the foreseeable future. Nobody knows when the state might come in and expand the highway. It could be 7 years. It could be 50 years. But I know, talking with Beth and Ryan, their goal is to continue Dubs and keeping it around the community. And so it's going to be at that location for now, and in the future, if need be, they plan to move it to a different location if the state comes in and decides to do so. But Christy and I are definitely working hard to help Beth and Ryan get set up, helping them do some ordering, meeting with the folks necessary to get Dubs going, and I think they're getting close. I know I drove by this morning, and his sign in the window said they're 90%. His loading bar says 90%, so they're getting really close, and we're hoping to definitely support them going forward, whether it's me being in there in the kitchen helping him cook, Christy work in the front counter. We are certainly passionate about Dubs and about the community, and so we're very encouraged to see it keep going. The fact that it wasn't for us didn't mean that we wanted to see it go away, and so we're really excited to help Beth and Ryan keep Dubs going and be able to enjoy it for ourselves and our kids in the community. So
nothing says summer like soft serve ice cream at Dubs.
Absolutely.
The heart and soul of a restaurant are the people and the culture and the atmosphere. The location can be an important driver to success, but restaurants successfully move. We can look at the track record of Arlo's relocating in town or Vano's and others. But so Dubs will continue on somewhere even after the city acquires for the state the land to redo the interchange.
Yep, that's the plan. Yeah, like you said, the relationships I built with Dubs is definitely the love I had for it. It was a very hard time to take over a restaurant. I think that was a lot of what caused my stress and anxiety too with it, just being going through COVID and taking over, and our staff was wearing masks and we couldn't have people sitting in the restaurant. It just made it really hard starting off the bat. But the people and the staff, I mean, we had probably 50, 60 kids come through that work for us in our 2.5 years of Dubs. And there's a lot of them that are still like children to me. I mean, I've got one kid at home, but I've got 25 others that I still keep track of and go to sporting events and cheer them on. And so I really enjoyed those relationships and the community. It was great to have the community coming in and getting to know the folks there.
I don't think it's too far a stretch to use an analogy of Dubs perhaps qualifying for some form of threatened and endangered species status and help. And this might just be a natural extension of the way you do your work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think they go hand in hand with each other. Absolutely. So it was a great opportunity. We really enjoyed it, and we really appreciated the community's support, and we're glad to see it keep going. And we're also glad to be able to stay in the community and doing what we are passionate about and what we love.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up this show. And if listeners want to learn more about the rare grizzly bear or the rare double cheeseburger onion ring combo, Austin Terrell's the guy to see. He's the project manager for Terrestrial Species in the Governor's Office of Species Conservation, and also involved in the ownership and management of doves going forward. Austin, thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word and let people know.
If anyone missed part of this interview and wants to listen to all of it, of course, it is available as a podcast, will be available as a podcast here at krfy.org. We're going to take a short music break and come back with some upcoming events here at the station and around town. Probably you guessed it, we're going to go into a little bit of Lyle Lovett.